Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased true crime channel. Now, we have a busy docket today, and it involves Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell. There's been a flurry of new motions that have been filed. It gives us a lot of insight, and it also makes you wonder, is Mark Means setting himself up for another embarrassing situation? Second, Letitia Stauch won't be teaching anytime soon. Third, a 12-year-old protects his grandmother and himself. A 29-year-old is charged for dating a 13-year-old, and wait until you hear who is okay with the relationship. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk. My name is Scott Reich. Thanks for watching. If you haven't done so already, please hit that subscribe button and make sure you hit that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. Hope you all had a great weekend. Now, there have been a lot of new motions and filings in the Lori Vallow, Chad Daybell matter. A lot of these motions that are being filed are in response to motions filed by Mark Means seeking to compel the government to turn over discovery that he believes has not been turned over. That has resulted in a hearing that has been set on the February 17th at 9:30 a.m. and we'll bring you that hearing live. Now, this is a hearing regarding the motion to compel. We've been able to glean a little bit of information since the court has not made the motion that was specifically filed by Mark Means available. However, based upon the responses in the government's motions, we can tell quite clearly what Mark Means has been asking for. And the response to the supplemental declaration of counsel Mark Means in support of his motion to compel, the government has went back and looked at their files, and they basically have said that, hey, everything that we're required to turn over, we've already turned over to Mr. Means. And in our discovery and review of all of the discovery, out of an abundance of caution, we couldn't verify that Mr. Pryor, Chad Daybell's counsel, had received several statements and reports, and therefore we are sending those to him once again just to make absolutely certain that he has the discovery. And in the response, the government states that in the same phone/device forensic report listed above that they refer to, they state that they were provided to Mr. Means' counsel for Lori Vallow on or about the week of May 18th, 2020. And the prosecution goes on to state that both defense counsel have received the same discovery to date. Now, we talked about this a little bit. And in the criminal realm of the practice of law, the courts don't like you rushing to the court if you think there's a discovery dispute. That's a little different in the civil world. In the civil world, you really don't go to court that often. And so if there's a civil dispute, you basically call up the judge and say, "Judge, they're not giving me something," and they resolve it. I can tell you as a practical matter, and we do this all the time in my practice, if we're going through the discovery, we make a list of things that we think that have not been turned over. And we send a nice letter to the district attorney saying, "Hey, we haven't received these documents, reports, interviews, whatever it may be, that were referenced in the discovery. Could you please provide them?" 99% of the time, the district attorney is going to say, "Hey, you know what? Thank you. I thought this had been turned over, or I haven't seen it myself. Let me follow up with the detectives because it's my duty and obligation as a prosecutor to turn everything over to you." That is my experience. On a rare occasion, if the prosecutor's not turning something over, you have to file a motion to compel or motion to produce the discovery. And you go to the court. The first thing the court's going to ask is, "Well, have you asked the district attorney?" And you usually attach to your motion the nice letter that you sent to the district attorney saying, "Hey, I haven't received this." And then the court says, okay, I hope the district attorney has a really good response here, because clearly defense counsel has not tried to bring the court into discovery issues, since discovery is an ongoing and continuous process for the prosecutor. And courts don't have time to deal with petty disputes, so you better make sure you got it right. Now here, the prosecution is saying that Mark Means has received this discovery back in May of 2020. Ooh, that's the kind of thing, before you go filing motions saying you haven't received something, you go back and double check. You go back and ask your assistant to go find this discovery and somehow double, triple check before you go to the court that you haven't received it, and maybe you just missed it. Maybe it got put in a different file. Who knows? But you don't go to the court. The other response that was filed by the prosecutors in regards to the request by Mr. Means to have his client, Lori Vallow, have access to a cell phone. Not surprisingly, the district attorney said, are you kidding me? Because guess what? A cell phone would be contraband in the jail, and therefore there's no exception for Lori Vallow to have a cell phone. Additionally, this is the job of the sheriff, and we're not going to get involved in that particular issue. Other reason why Mark Means wants to have a cell phone for his client is that he states that his client and their communications together were somehow being monitored in some particular way, and that's interfering with his client's right to counsel under the Sixth Amendment, and therefore, once again, she's special. I've said this before. I've never heard of such a request. I couldn't imagine that a judge or a district attorney would agree to such a request. The district attorney, Mr. Wood, responds saying, are you kidding me? We already litigated this issue at the motion for bond reduction when there was an issue regarding attorney-client calls that were recorded. At that time, both the sheriff and the district attorney said one call was recorded by mistake. It was deleted. It had never happened again. Mr. Means also notes that everyone at the jail, attorneys, and Mr. Wood also notes in his motion that everyone at the county jail, as well as attorneys, all have to use the same communication devices. And if it is an attorney-client communication call, that those are not monitored or recorded. If they continue to proceed and it is not a flagged attorney-client call, yes, it could be recorded, but both parties are advised by a recording on the audio saying this call is being recorded. That's very, very common in just about every jail situation I've ever received a call from. A specific system at this particular jail, the Madison County Jail, is the telemate system, which they all have to use. So once again, I believe that Mr. Mark Means' motion will be denied. Now, in the response by the people, Mr. Wood, he attaches the previous pleadings as exhibits, specifically referencing these attorney-client communication calls. Basically, what this really is some sort of motion to reconsider. We all know how the court feels about motions to reconsider. Is they're not really permitted unless you have some new or additional information. There's been no allegation made of any new or additional information in these pleadings from what we can tell. And in fact, that's why Mr. Wood attaches to his motion all of the exhibits from the previous hearings and explaining that there is no special rule for Lori Vallow to have a cell phone. The court is also going to be able to see Mr. Means' tweets where he states that the attorney-client communications were recorded and he is somehow taken to Twitter, thinking that that is going to be some way to influence the court or get a better result here. Somehow, I do not think it will be at all. Now, what is of greater significance is Pryor, the attorney for Chad DeBell, has filed a declaration of counsel in response to the motions filed by Mr. Means. And I think this is rather interesting. He states that he is the attorney for Chad Daybell in the above referenced matter and makes the following declaration upon his own personal knowledge and belief. And he states, Mr. Mark Means does, says that my client is currently being held at the Fremont County Jail, that there has not been a single issue with the Fremont County Jail or their staff as it relates to visitation or treatment of his client at the Fremont County Jail, that given the tremendous amount of local exposure given this case, the Fremont County Jail deputies and the entire staff have responded immediately to any questions I might have and have conducted themselves as exemplary professionals. Their exemplary conduct and professionalism have been consistent throughout the entire process so far. That as it relates to Mr. Daybell, I have not had a single incident of any type and have not had the same experience that Mr. Means has apparently had at the Madison County Jail. Bottom line is, different jails, okay, fine. One's in Madison, one's in Fremont. Is this his way to get the clients in the same situation? Don't know. I personally think that is a way of Mr. Pryor trying to say, hey, I haven't had any problems. I don't want to be associated with any of this or somehow think that I'm joining in this motion in any way whatsoever. And in the final motion, the discovery of disclosure, the prosecution has stated that pursuant to the criminal rules of procedure, Rule 16, which is self-executing and ongoing, that all of the statements of the defendant, the co-defendant, defendant's prior records, documents, and tangible objects have either been made available, produced already, or the defense counsel and their investigator can come at a mutually convenient time and photograph and inspect all of the materials. The district attorney states, in fact, all the reports of examination and tests attached as Exhibit A. Witness statements from state witnesses will attach those as Exhibit B. Expert witnesses, addendum. Police reports previously been provided, detailing everything that is out there and everything that has been turned over. So, what will ultimately take place on the 17th at 9:30 a.m. before the Honorable Judge Stephen W. Boyce? I do believe that the defense, specifically Mr. Means and Lori Vallow, will not, and I say again, will not have any of their motions granted. As it appears, the prosecution has done everything they can do, and it's very unlikely the court would grant, even if it wanted to, a cell phone for Lori Vallow. So I believe this is another embarrassing situation for Mr. Means and Lori Vallow coming up on Wednesday. We shall be there with you all and see how things ultimately turn out. Next on the docket, Letitia Stauch. Obviously, Letitia Stauch is accused of first-degree murder as it relates to the death of Gannon Stauch here in Colorado. Letitia Stauch has also been a teacher in South Carolina, and in fact, she notes that in her pro se letters to the court, as well as in previous situations, trying to seek some leniency in some way. Well, Letitia Stauch's teaching license was previously suspended back in 2016 because of what they refer to as unprofessional conduct. Specifically, she breached a contract for employment. Upon her arrest back in March of 2020, the state board summarily suspended Stauch's South Carolina education certification following her arrest. Well, now it has become official. The South Carolina State Board of Education has ordered a permanent revocation of Letitia Stauch's teaching credentials. Now, does this really matter in the big picture? Let's face it, Letitia Stauch has much bigger problems as it relates to her current charges and her current situation than her teaching certificate. But this just goes to show you, when allegations are made, people's lives are affected and their ability to make a living, if she were to be found not guilty, has already been hampered in some way. Now, obviously, we'll continue to give Letitia Stack the presumption of innocence. And as we've talked about before, the affidavit for the arrest warrant for Letitia Stack clearly paints a situation where Ms. Stack has made a lot of different and contradictory statements about her interactions with Gannon, as well as what she did immediately thereafter. This matter is set for a preliminary hearing early next month. We will bring you updates as they become available. Next on the docket, a 12-year-old defends not only himself, but his grandmother. A 12-year-old shot at two masked intruders who broke into his grandmother's home just before 1 a.m. on Saturday morning. The intruders had demanded money from 73-year-old Linda Ellis and subsequently shot her. Police said the juvenile then fired in self-defense as the suspects, who then fled. Officers found one of the suspects, 19-year-old Khalil Herring, at an intersection near the home suffering from an apparent gunshot wound. Preliminary evidence suggests that Khalil Herring was one of the two masked intruders and was shot during the robbery. Both Ellis, the grandmother, and Herring were transported to the hospital. Herring was later pronounced dead. Ellis, the juvenile's grandmother, was treated for injuries that were not life-threatening. The police do not anticipate bringing any charges against the 12-year-old simply because he was defending his grandmother's home, her, and himself. At least common sense has prevailed there. Hopefully, the other alleged suspect will be brought to justice as well. Before we continue on with the docket, a quick recess, please. And I'm telling you, this next story will convince you you need to check people out. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched, and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever. But if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship. You're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. All right. A 29-year-old man has been charged this week with sexually abusing a 13-year-old girl that he considered to be his girlfriend and that they were in a relationship. Bill Ernest Davenport and the girl, who initially denied any sexual involvement whatsoever, but Davenport later admitted that they were boyfriend and girlfriend. When Mr. Davenport agreed to provide a DNA sample along with examination of his phone, that's right, investigators found photos of Davenport molesting the girl. The victim's mother reportedly denied knowing anything about the relationship, but others told a much different story. Interviews revealed that it was common knowledge among Bill, the victim, and the mother's social circle that Bill and the victim were in a sexual relationship and that the mother encouraged and condoned the relationship. Not only does Mr. Davenport have charges, but investigators are asking that the mother be charged with injury to a child. Now, this took place in Idaho. We'll see if anybody gets too concerned about it, because obviously in the Vallo-Daybell matter, it took a long time for really anyone to get too concerned about the children at all. Obviously, we'll give Mr. Davenport and the mom the presumption of innocence, and we'll see what happens in that case. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. But first, the winner from last week's dumb criminal contestant is Blakely Sands. She is the young woman who went to an Oklahoma bar, had her fake ID taken by the bouncers. She then called the police, demanding that her fake ID be returned. whereupon she was charged with felony crimes of impersonation as well as attempting to influence a public official. Not good. It was a close vote. I really thought that James Cushman was going to be the winner, the man who stole his fiance's ring from a previous marriage and gave it to his new fiance, whereupon the other fiance recognized the ring in his Facebook postings. It was kind of my personal favorite, but that's the way we call it. Blakely Sands, congratulations. Not only are you having a big couple of weeks here by getting arrested, charged with felonies, you're now the dumb criminal contestant winner of the week. Congratulations. Now, we've said this before. If you'd like to get cool Crime Talk merchandise without having to become the dumb criminal contestant winner, that's right, because we'll send them a mug. Blakely, send us a photo of yourself with the mug and we'll put it up. But if you'd like to have that gear, simply go to the link below, order what you want. It'll be with you in a couple of days. Now, our dumb criminal contestant of the day, meet Joanna Zielinski. She's 62 and she has a sister named Laura. They were apparently drinking the other night at their home down in Naples, Florida, when Laura went to sleep on the couch. Joanna, according to the police, stayed up and consumed more alcoholic beverages and perhaps a few narcotics. At some point, Joanna went crazy and attacked Laura, the sister, with an EpiPen, stabbing her multiple times. You know, an EpiPen is used for people that have allergic reactions. I think the most common one is, for example, bee stings, but it could be lots of other reactions. Now, when Joanna was asked by the police what she was doing, she stated, quote, "I'm allergic to drunks, so I injected her with an EpiPen so she wouldn't be drunk anymore. What's the big deal?" Now, Joanna was prescribed the EpiPen for herself, but her sister Laura was not and was actually a little concerned if she could have some sort of reaction or side effect with the EpiPen being injected in her multiple times. Joanna has been arrested for domestic battery and booked into jail. She's scheduled for an arraignment on March 1st. Congratulations, Joanna Zielinski. You are our dumb criminal contestant of the day. All right, that's all we have for you today. Thanks for watching. Don't forget, tomorrow we'll put up a show, but we'll also have our weekly live at 6 p.m. Mountain Time. Please join us.